because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, this week in the Capitol, but we're also going to preview. It's crunch time, J.R.
Yes, it is.
It's choke time.
Yes.
To paraphrase that old country western song, things always get interesting at closing time.
Yes.
Let's look at 10 bills, and okay. we'll walk through them. And then at the end, let's say whether you think they're going to become law or not. Let's start with the governor's college affordability package. It costs $7.65 million. Yes, it does. It would remove the cap on tax deduction for interest payments on student loans, $1 million more for grants to attend tech colleges, $450,000 for emergency grants if you're a student and you have health care or
car breaks down.
Yep, things like that. And hire 2 state workers to increase on-the-job internships. Now, we have both heard legislative leaders say this is our top priority. Speaker Voss said it yesterday. Any thoughts on this thing?
What's interesting is this is one of those bills that's meeting the reality of the finances, if you will, of the state capitol right now. So, what, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, we got new revenue numbers from Fiscal Bureau.
Yep.
They weren't down dramatically, but it left less of a cushion, if you will.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of nervousness among some people, especially in the Senate Republican caucus, about spending anything more right now. We're still a year and 4 months out from this fiscal year being over. That's a long time to have things maybe fluctuate. So this week, Governor said, $20 million cap and new spending. Voss said yesterday, and Nygren, the co-chair of finance, we're good with that number. So if you're using that as your benchmark, sure, you know that's you can afford to do this. Interesting too, Walker, I asked him the other day, what are the most important jobs bills you can do before the session's over?
You asked that
question. Mentioned specifically these 2 tech college grants, that would get more kids through these programs and these high demand jobs. So that's a priority for them. The Senate GOP caucus, however, has its own clock, if you will, and seems more nervous about spending money. So I'm not saying they won't get there eventually, but it may have to be one of those, again, Scott Fitzgerald kind of letting his caucus sift and winnow through what's going on before coming to the conclusion of, yes, we can do it.
And Voss said yesterday, this is one of our top priorities, mm-hmm. so I look for this to be on the governor's desk. Yeah, agree?
I'm not sure if they do all of it in this biennium. There are options, remember. They could, and I'm not saying they will, but they could, for example, say, well, we're going to pass these pieces, but have the effective date be this year. Or, for example, the tax deduction. You could pass it now, and that would be effective tax year starting January 1 of Things like that could help minimize the cost. I get the impression they want to get it done. It's what's it look like when it is done, and can they get all done this session with the price tag?
Do you expect the Democrats to continue to stand on principle? This does not go anywhere near far enough and vote no? Because if not, isn't that a campaign soundbite against them in November?
Well, it'll be interesting because they've taken that stand so far and said it's not enough. I don't know. I don't know what they'll do, but so far they're staying strong, saying it's not enough, it's not adequate, and doesn't address the people who have big problems right now with their student loan debt. It's not doing enough for them. I mean, the Walker argument is cut the cost in the front end and it makes it easier.
Yeah.
But if you're 10 years out of school and still have X thousand dollars in debt, doesn't do a lot for you.
Yeah, and he also says we have frozen UW tuition for 4 mm-hmm. straight years, and that helps. Okay, the next one. This major bill on navigable waterways, it's just, I mean, it's a hydra. It's got mm-hmm. so many provisions. There's deeds, you can get deeds to dry lake beds, but one of the most contentious issue is instead of case-by-case dredging permits, there would be a general dredging permit.
What is it, 30 cubic yards?
Wow.
Around there?
Okay, if you say so, man.
I think so. Don't hold me to that one, but it's somewhere in that neighborhood.
All right. But the environmentalists do not like this, but I don't see them holding this up. I think this thing has got some traction. It's been refined. Speaker Voss said yesterday Representative Jarko has done a good job on it.
It's on the assembly calendar, I believe, next week.
Tuesday, I think.
So that's a sign they've got the votes there. The Senate, again, is the issue. Rob Coles from Green Bay, very much a big environmentalist in the Republican caucus. His committee had a hearing on this, I believe, this week or last week, had some real concerns about it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the current form gets done this session. There may be some work to be done if they're going to get it done, but there's still some roadblocks. There are still some roadblocks for that bill yet, I think, this session.
So you have questions whether this is a done deal?
Yes.
When they go home?
Unless there are changes, and you're talking a narrow window to get changes done that can get everybody on board. Even with changes, you can still have some environmental folks who are not happy with it, but let's be honest. for Republicans, they're not the biggest constituency that they cater to or that they agree with, if you will. So right. I'm not sure the environments will ever be on board with anything they do, but can they get so that Republicans are happy with it and they feel comfortable? That's
but a month ago, there were four property rights bills, and this is the only one that has a chance at the finish line, doesn't it?
Good question. So this one's got the most attention at this point. That's as far as I want to go right now. I haven't seen.
That's true.
Because the Assembly, just talking to Majority Leader Steinick a while ago, they're talking about maybe pushing through 150-plus bills the last week they're on the floor. There's a lot of stuff to fill out that roster.
Yeah, that's true.
So I haven't got a final list yet of what's going to make it and what's not.
Okay. The third one, let's talk about the county local option 0.5% sales tax, half of a penny to maintain streets and bridges. I talked to Knutson. He said, I'm going to push hard. We haven't got an Assembly vote. DOA?
There's no way it gets to the Senate. So now, what's interesting was in committee, it was what, a unanimous vote, I think, with Democrats and Republicans?
Yeah, nine zip.
In the Assembly. The Senate has zero interest in this bill. Now, Tom Tiffany is one of the co-authors. He's got
the only co-author
interest in it. But the caucus as a whole, Republican caucus, is not there. And let's be honest, when I'm talking about the Republican caucus so much, is because leadership has always loathed to require minority votes to pass anything. So even if you have, there are 19 members of the Senate Republican caucus, even if you have 10 members who want something, mm-hmm. they're not going to use Democrats to pass a bill. They need to have 17 votes in that caucus for anything, barring some surprise. And there just aren't 17 votes that I see right now in the Senate Republican caucus for that bill.
Well, Mark O'Connell of the Wisconsin counties and mm-hmm. the League of Municipalities and the towns and the villages, they say that the fiscal note shows that if all 62 counties that now have the local option, if they opted for this, it could raise more than $300 for local streets and bridges. So they've got their needs on the side, but the politics is completely against them.
You know, and the backers are making this argument of, look, it's not a true tax hike from us because it would require
a referendum.
It has a sunset. You have to reauthorize it. It doesn't go on in perpetuity. So in their minds, this is a much different tax than maybe raising the sales tax or the gas tax or whatever. But still, it's still a tax. It's still an election year. That's not a tough sell for a lot of people.
Okay, it's not going to pass. But what it does do is add to the general angst over transportation funding long-term mm-hmm. at the state and local level.
Well, absolutely.
It turns up the heat even more for the next budget.
Well, Scott Fitzgerald at the County Association meeting this week says it's going to be another tough budget coming up. We're a year and 2 weeks from now, we'll have a new budget before us, believe it or not.
Yes.
So it's going to be another tough budget, Fitzgerald's warning. So if that's out there, we've talked before. If you're going to raise revenue for transportation and you're not going to do a gas tax hike or fee increase, it's got to be more general purpose revenue. And if Fitz is saying it's going to be a tough budget, that's a sign that money's not going to be there for the tax decrease that Walker wants to offset a gas tax increase or to pump more money or transfer more money over. Now, things could turn around the next year, but it's not looking that great for that to happen.
So, sorry, counties, sorry, villages, you're not going to get that local option sales tax. This dementia package is a late starter. It scores out at what, 2 to 3 million? Does that mm-hmm. sound right?
Yes.
1 million more to pay for respite care for caregivers, 4 more dementia care specialists in smaller counties, a new awareness program for caregivers and employers, and a pilot training program for mobile crisis teams. Voss again yesterday told reporters like us, this is on my list of must pass.
Yes.
Yes.
It will definitely clear the Assembly. The Senate, again, is what are they comfortable with spending? That's going to be an issue. And one thing about both this and the college affordability package, too, is they can find money elsewhere. Niagara mentioned this yesterday before a finance meeting that, it may have a price tag, but there's money other places. And now with his TAD, TAD, the diversion courts for alcohol and drug dependency,
those
people, they grabbed $4 million, not from GPR, but from a fund set aside for the mental health institutions at Winnebago and Mendota, because that money there's a surplus there, he said. Mm-hmm. So there could be pots of money to pull from that they could finagle in the end to make this all work. Now, that's all to be determined. There are also always lots of interesting negotiations, if you will, the final month before they go home.
The final hours.
These things, and I guess this and the college affordability package could get done as is with the price tag if they find money elsewhere or if they push things. Those are things that have to kind of be determined yet. But definitely, Voss will get that package through his chamber.
I'm really curious about this next issue. The state senate on a voice vote passed this bill, fourth OWI in 5 years is a felony. and it came out of Assembly Committee, and I talked to Representative Jim Ott, and he said, look, I'm going to push as hard as I can for this bill. But as we talked last week, the corrections fiscal estimate, you know, between 97 and 129 million, I'm close. Mm-hmm. Do you see this bill getting considered by the Assembly?
The best hope that it has is that those expenses are in out years. So that might make it easier to swallow with the situation that we're in. But it still adds a long-term expense to our tab, if you will. And that's what I'm not quite clear about at this point, if it's going to get done.
How would you bet?
Ooh, I don't like to bet on stuff like that.
Okay, I understand.
Craps are fine.
But it's going to be one of those that's going to come right down to the wire, isn't it?
Possibly, yeah. So these bills are so tough sometimes because you don't know who comes out in the last second and really pushes hard not to have it done. Look, we've had a drunk driving issue in Wisconsin forever. The Tavern League is a very powerful force in Wisconsin politics.
They're not registered on this bill. I looked it up.
So, you know, there are things like that. You kind of wonder what pops up in the end. These things have had a hard time before, so maybe this one gets through. I don't know.
Another late idea. I was surprised at this agreement. We have this bill, Amnesty from Underage Drinking Citations for Victims and Witnesses of Sexual Assault. There's no major cost here. Mm-mm. This is a symbolic bill, but the press conference was only done with state assembly leaders. So do you see this one as
certain bills are introduced late in the session that lay down a marker, if you will, for discussion we had later on. Oh. I'm not saying this one won't get done this session, but if it doesn't, this may be the beginning of the conversation for next session. UW officials who went to that news conference said, we already have this as a policy in place now. So they think it's helped. Now, they can't pinpoint that this one thing has helped increase reports of sexual assault, but it's part of an overall package that they believe has helped encourage people to come forward. I'm not sure it gets done this year. Maybe it starts its conversation for next session.
Here's another fascinating one. This bill that would make it easier for private businesses to buy municipal water systems. It already passed the Assembly, but that was before Flint, lead contamination. And this bill is pushed by a giant private company called Aqua America. And what it says now, if you want to sell your municipal water system, you must have a referendum. It makes a referendum optional, and local residents would have to petition for it. There's 582 local water utilities. I looked that up, too. This one was discovered by Bruce Murphy of Urban Milwaukee, and then the Journal Sentinel got on it. This is a fascinating issue. How do you see this one? It's already passed the Assembly.
This is another one of those ones that I don't have the best read in the Senate caucus of where it's going to end up, Senate Republican caucus, where mm-hmm. it's going to end up. And again, guys like Rob Coles, how much sway do those folks have with the rest of the caucus? Don't forget, it's also election year.
Yeah.
And so people who are in swing-ish seats, they tend not to like to take up their controversial things right before they go home. So that, you know, kind of watch that one right now. It's the best I can tell you.
It's absolutely fascinating. And Kurt Witinski of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities said, to his knowledge, I'm not aware of any local water utility that is asking for this. So it's clearly being driven by this large private company whose lobbyist is former Majority Leader Steve Foti. Mm-hmm. Now, another fascinating one. Do you see the ban on fetal tissue research as absolutely dead?
Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
They'd prefer not even talk about it at this point.
What killed it?
Well, the research piece of it. Republican caucuses in general are in agreement about the sale of fetal tissue from an abortion. Now, under federal law, it's already illegal, I believe. You can't profit from this. So there's a little redundancy, if you will, if you pass a state law about it. But that aside, that piece they're all okay with. It's the ban on the use of fetal tissue in research as an issue because UW-Madison, let's be honest, Jamie Thompson pioneered stem cell research.
Yes.
Well, unless your other researchers say maybe not, but he's the one given the credit, if you will.
He's the one that made Time Magazine's cover. Go
That's
ahead.
Right. So he gets credit as the birthplace of stem cell research. It is a blossoming industry in Wisconsin. They don't want Republicans, these Republicans who are unhappy or uneasy about that piece, don't want to nip that in the bud. You know, they want to see that blossom. So there's that issue going on. Even last night, I believe Wisconsin Family Action had some kind of get together, and you follow on Twitter, you know, they were even saying bill's not going to happen. We got other priorities done, but this one's not going to get there. The fervor has died down a bit about those videos. So they got a couple Planned Parenthood bills through that may or may not cut them off from funding.
That was an interesting story.
But this piece is just not going to get done this session.
How about the lack of money and the fact that the governor said don't spend any more than 20 out of our 70 million available surplus? Is that going to kill the Assembly GOP rural initiative?
Another one of those ones that may get out the door this session for a longer term discussion. I mean, like the broadband grants, for example. You know, if you're a Democrat, you say, look, it's just not enough money. It doesn't do enough. You know, you're just kind of going halfway. We need more on things like that. So that's the one I have not seen that pick up a lot of steam in the Senate. So what can they get done in a month before they go home? It may be a symbolic move. And by the way, a couple of these members of this initiative are from swingy districts.
Brooks, Tranel. Or Tranel especially.
It's a nice thing to get done and say, look, we got to start on this thing. We're trying to bring stuff back home. So there's that piece of it. I just don't know with the workload what can get done in the Senate. They haven't really kind of come together and said, here is our list just yet that I know of.
Yeah. But some of the things, as you say, this is a assembly-driven package. They want to boost money for youth apprenticeships. They want rural opportunity zones. What was fascinating to me is if these rural opportunity zones are approved and you have student loans and you work as a professional in these rural areas, you could get up to $25,000 or 40% of your student loans forgiven. And they want a boost in the rural physicians program. So this is a very real agenda, but I agree with you. This does not hit the governor's desk by the end of the session. Mm-hmm. And then 10, minimum markup, which...
It is. We're kind of chuckling because it's just fascinating to see the conservative media, which did a very excellent job getting through prevailing wage changes, right to work this session, banging the gong now for minimum markup, and it's just not getting any traction. But it's a different dynamic with minimum markup than it was with those others. You know, right to work became this train that you just couldn't, either you got on board or got run over. Governor Walker found that out the hard way, right? Minimum markup has, the whole time I've been here in Madison, has split Republicans. Sometimes urban versus rural, that's not actually the cleanest, you know, description of it. You have Republicans who represent especially rural areas who feel like their mom and pop stores would get run out by a Walmart, for example. It comes in, big box comes in, sets up shop, drives them out of business, and then has a monopoly because there's no other store for 30 miles. You know, they worry about that. Now, the backers of minimum, the repeal of this law say that is not going to happen anymore. We live in an internet-based society. You can click and buy something cheaper online than that monopoly might have, so it's not a real concern. But those lines exist and have for a long time. What's interesting, too, this session is we've had high-profile Democrats before get on board with repealing minimum markup. Jim Doyle was not a fan of the minimum markup on gas. And
there you go.
Basically, at one point, it refused to enforce it on ethanol. Remember that, like 10 years ago, maybe?
Years ago.
Yeah, trying to pick our old memories. But, you know, that's not happening this session. You don't see Democrats jumping on board with Republicans. Right. So, and again, that whole thing of even you cobble together 50 votes in the Assembly and 17 in the Senate, if you don't have the majority of votes for that bill from the majority caucuses, it's tough to push it through. And it's interesting to watch almost the frustration or exasperation from the talk show hosts or that they're not getting their way on that. This is not, why is this not happening? They can't believe it's not, but it's just, there's no discussion that I can pick up in the Capitol of really doing this. Now, there are members who are pushing the education piece of this to lay the foundation for another conversation, but it's just not happening at this point.
Okay, we've looked at 10 bills that are caught up in the crunch, which is the end of the session crunch is one of the most fascinating times to cover that place because it's nuances and, you know, it's like watching used to be in the Kremlin. Anything come to mind as any additional one? No?
That's plenty.
Okay, that's a good answer. You know, so I always read my
opiate pills. Those are going to get done. I mean,
which one?
Not John Nygren's opiate package.
Oh yeah, that's going to.
The next round of those bills. I mean, hey, give him credit. That guy has done a very good job.
Yep.
Piecing those things together, getting support for him, even like on the $4 million they grabbed from the mental health fund, institution fund. You know, Democrats were not happy about that, used it as a pinata about the budget in general. They all voted for it in the end.
Yeah.
They love TAD. TAD is a popular thing. That, right. So that stuff will get done.
Well, what a perfect segue. I mentioned John Nygren into Congressman Reed Ribbles. So I always read my Wispolitics report, and then last weekend you lay one on me. Ribbles announced he's not going to seek a fourth term.
Yes.
Were you surprised?
Yes, because Ribble had made clear that he was going to be four terms up or out. Like that was perception among insiders was he won't stay past 8 years, but he'll stay to eight and then run for something else in 18. So the fact that he retired now caught people off guard. They weren't expecting that. Now, there could be a couple things that went into that. I mean, one, if you look at his interviews, he said, I'm just tired of Congress. It's a dysfunctional place. He was home for a week because of the snowstorm in D.C. and home for something else, and his wife said, I want you home.
That's right. That's what he told me yesterday. It was just fascinating. He also said he kept this huge secret. His family knew, his chief of staff knew, didn't even tell Speaker Ryan.
Yeah.
Speaker Ryan had encouraged him, as they talked about it, to seek a fourth term.
And now what's interesting is the perception has been that Ripple would stick around until 18 and then have an opening to run for governor, for example, if Walker didn't seek another term, or the U.S. Senate. Tammy Baldwin's up there. Talking to folks, maybe Governor Walker talking more affirmatively about running for a fourth term or third term in 18, maybe Ripple said that door's not going to be open. You know, so what's the point of hanging around? Now, hey, he could still retire, take a year off, you know, live the private life.
Right.
Walker could announce I'm not running re-election and come back and run. There's no law against that. But maybe there's less incentive, if you will, to hang around if you don't see an opportunity in 2018.
In my interview with him yesterday, I did say, what about governor in 2018? He said, as you just said, we have a governor. I fully support Governor Walker. The next question is if he doesn't run. And I said, do you believe you're qualified to be governor? He gave me a one-word answer, yes, and we moved on. Who is likely? You mentioned John Nygren. Is he likely to run?
Good question. I kind of, in talking to him yesterday, he said he's got another 7 to 10 days maybe before he makes a decision.
Wow.
Roger Roth
said
this week.
No.
Now, it was kind of surprising because I got the impression from him and other folks, he wanted to run.
Well, his uncle held that from 79 through 96. Go ahead.
He ran in 2010 and finished second to Ripple in the primary.
Yeah.
But Roger has a third child coming. Not too long, I think maybe spring sometime.
I think April.
So that makes it tough. I mean, that's a true family priority, if you will, that maybe prevented him from running. Frank Lissay from DePere.
He's got a free shot, doesn't he?
Free shot. Doesn't have to give him a Senate seat. That may be an attractive thing for him. Now, John Mocco and Dave Steffen, two freshman lawmakers in the district in the Green Bay area, they'd have to give up their seats. They're in their first terms.
Yes.
A little bit tougher call. Then Nygren's been there for a decade, a Senate to Joint Finance co-chair. Robin Voss isn't going anywhere, we don't think, anytime soon, so not going to become Speaker next term. So maybe Nygren's more willing to give up, you know, that career in the Assembly. I don't know. Michael Gallagher, who was an advisor to Governor Walker during his presidential campaign, he's bandying around the idea of running. The guy is a veteran, worked in D.C., I think the Foreign Relations Committee, something like that, then came back home to work with the Walker campaign, is stuck around. Family is from the Green Bay area. He would maybe more of that outsider type thing, the non-politician. But, you know, if you work the U.S. Senate committee, you're kind of hard to be, you know, a total private sector guy. The question, though, is who's the next Reed Ripple? There's probably some guy or gal out there in the Green Bay area, the 8th Congressional somewhere, who is either watching Fox News or reading the Wall Street Journal, kind of like Ron Johnson did 6 years ago, saying, I could do this. And has $1 million in the bank to run. That would be somebody. We don't know who that person is, but could emerge later.
You don't mention former Representative Chad Weininger, who now works in Brown County.
He's also making calls, from what I understand, and looking at it. So it's a wide open race right now on the Republican side.
Okay, now let's talk about the Dems. The only ones I've heard, Tom Nelson and Penny Bernard Shaver. Anybody else?
I talked to Barb Lawton this week. She said she's not interested in running for office anymore.
Former Lieutenant Governor.
Lieutenant Governor.
Doyle.
There's a restaurateur up in the Door County, Lars Johnson.
Oh, the one with goats on the roof.
Yep. Said he looked at running against Ripple at one point, said, you know, he's waiting for Tom Nelson, thinks he'd be a good candidate. Amanda Stuck, a freshman rep, said no. Eric Genrich, another freshman rep, sophomore for Green Bay, said no.
Two-term.
So you're kind of looking at Tom Nelson, maybe Penny Bernard Shaver, and again, is there another person we don't know about, kind of in the weeds? There aren't many elected Dems holding office right now in that district, which there's a smaller pool, if you will, of obvious candidates. Nelson seems to be like the 800-pound gorilla. If he gets in, he would be kind of the favorite among Democrats because he's got executive experiences, you know, county execs.
He knocks on every door.
He's a hard worker.
He is.
He ran for lieutenant governor in 2010. All these boxes are checked with him. Now, he also, I think, has a child on the way, so there's an issue there. But Tom Nelson is a very ambitious person who has shown a work ethic that, you know, this may be his opportunity to run. Now, people also talked about him in 2018 as a gubernatorial candidate. So,
yes.
You know.
He likes that talk, by the way.
Yes, he does. If he runs for Congress, and this is like all hypotheticals, but if you run for Congress and win, can turn around, run for governor, you know, or is that avenue closed up? All those kind of questions that he might have to answer.
This is an R-leaning district, because I looked it up. 32 of the last 38 years it's been represented by Republicans, much of that because of Toby Roth.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair?
Yes, but it's a presidential year.
Now, higher Democratic turnout.
What we don't know is the Obama coalition that won Wisconsin by 7 and 14 or 16 points, will that coalition stick around or be there for a Hillary Clinton or a Bernie Sanders? I don't know at this point. If it's a much closer, like 2000-2004 type state, mm-hmm. it's a different ballgame.
That's true.
But if it's if the trend holds where Dems have a big boost in turnout compared to Republicans, and we are a lean Dem or even kind of like darker light blue,
there's a curious term.
Then that makes a real pickup opportunity. And even Republicans will tell you that Tom Nelson would be somebody who could win that seat even in a close top of the ticket election, because he cuts across a couple of, you know, dynamics that makes him a good candidate.
Yeah.
So if
okay.
he runs.
Okay. Stock picks, rising.
So Rebecca Bradley, this primary is playing out exactly like I thought it would. Not that I'm any kind of like prognosticator, but we all knew the conservative coalition would come out and run ads for Rebecca Bradley and help her to make sure she gets to the primary. Wisconsin Alliance for Reform last week puts down the buy. It was 420,000 the first week, or 450 the first week, 420 the second. So almost $900,000 now for a 2-week buy.
It's almost been doubled.
For the primary, praises Bradley, talks about how it's all these buzzwords that send signals to conservative voters of she's your candidate.
Right.
All right. So we all knew this would happen, and it's happening. It's playing out like that. She's got a radio ad up. And the other thing is you've got Kloppenberg and Donald still fighting over who's going to be the alternative, if you will. For them, it's can they get up on TV, radio? Does Kloppenberg rely on her name ID from running in 2011? What is clear right now is that Bradley will get through the primary. I mean, I think that's almost an easy bet.
I agree.
The question kind of becomes two things. One, does Trump have to score enough that groups go, okay, this is not a good bet come April to put my money in? But there's this little caveat all of a sudden. It's an interesting twist. We've been talking about the idea of Republicans having an active primary come April in Wisconsin, the Dems likely having Clinton having stolen the nomination. After Iowa and Bernie likely winning New Hampshire on Tuesday, can he survive through March with these kind of these back-to-back-to-back primaries and be viable as a candidate still in April?
Make a last stand in Wisconsin? Bringing out the progressives?
Wisconsin would be a great state for Bernie Sanders to run in. Remember, Barack Obama won here going away. That's a new wrinkle.
That is.
Now I'm kind of going, maybe there's going to be a real Dem primary. And also, if you talk to Republicans, they're almost hopeful that Rubio, because the perception you get in Iowa, right, plays third.
Yep.
He's the winner as a third-place finisher. He's surging in New Hampshire. That maybe, just maybe, he can all of a sudden coalesce folks and get this thing wrapped up. Well, if he wraps it up, and it's all out of ifs, all out of downs have to fall. But there's a new wrinkle to watch, if you will, for turnout in Wisconsin come April.
And I talked to a Kloppenberg supporter in Dane County who said, we're worried about supporters of Donald, the Milwaukee County Circuit Court judge, coming out and Kloppenberg finishing third. Yeah. They're worried about that.
Well, if you look at it, do you know the three top counties for Democratic votes in primaries are?
Well, Brown and Waukesha, I think, is number three.
Milwaukee, Dane, Waukesha. So Donald is from an area that is Democratic, it's rich with Democratic voters. Can he get enough, because Kloppenberg should do well in that in Dane County,
yeah.
to offset what she might do? Those are like all kinds of questions.
Yeah. You're mixed. I want to talk about this. Go ahead.
Mark Harris.
So Winnebago County Executive.
So a little wrinkle in his plan to run for the 18th Senate District all of a sudden. So Scott Fitzgerald rolls out this bill quickly that would say you cannot hold a county executive seat and a legislative seat at the same time.
Right.
Notice it wasn't introduced when Bob Ziegelbauer of Manitowoc was the Democrat turned independent representative who also was Manitowoc, or
he served in the assembly and held that Manitowoc County exec job for 6.5 years, he told me this week.
Or Paul Farrow, who ran for county exec while a sitting state senator, won the seat, held the job for 2 months, and then left in July to focus full-time on the county job. That wasn't a concern for a bill. But now you have somebody running in what is the top target seat in the Senate this fall,
yeah.
who has a county executive seat, who makes more than $100,000.
Makes $102,000, he told me this week.
Who would possibly have to take a choice between one or the other and see his salary cut in half. So it complicates things a little bit.
And it's also a priority because Senator Fitzgerald told me yesterday he hopes there's a public hearing on it next week. And Speaker mm-hmm. Voss says, I think it's perfectly fine bill to pass. I like it. So it sounds like it's going to be on the governor's desk. I talked to Mark Harris extensively. I asked him about this, and here's his statement. I think it is up to the voters to decide if a county executive can be elected to the state Senate, not Senator Fitzgerald. This tells me Republicans must be very nervous about my candidacy. If they cannot win at the polls, they will try to legislate their way to holding the 18th district. It won't work. It's just intriguing. You have 11 county executives, and their salaries range from $70,000 in Racine to former Democratic Rep Parisi in Dane County, $134,595. But, J.R., somebody pointed out to me, some legislators hold local office.
Mm-hmm. Todd Novak's mayor of Dodgeville?
Yes. So I just wonder, I think this bill ends up at the governor's desk, but it's kind of ironic that you're going to say, county execs, you can't serve in the legislature, not dealing with village, town board members, school board members, and we'll go back to your Todd Novak example.
Fitzgerald made no bones about it. This is all inspired by Mark Harris and his question about if taxpayers should be allowing you to double dip. Yep. You know, that's the way he looks at it, for what it's worth.
That's a fascinating late-starting bill.
Politics.
Okay, falling. Bankruptcy.
So bankruptcy, we dropped below 20,000 last year in Wisconsin for the first time in a few years. It topped out at 30-ish, so that's a good thing. Bankruptcies are down below 18,500, something like that. So, hey, good. Things may be getting better, picking up a little bit.
That's a good choice. Okay, two things before we adjourn, sir. The Democrats, Hillary and Bernie, that great train comes to Milwaukee on Thursday. Any thoughts in anticipation of that?
It'll be interesting to watch. Does he go after on emails? He's not going after so far. That's one thing I want to know. Like, and you read stories about national media of, like, can he win if he doesn't go after her biggest vulnerability? And if you're a Democrat, do you want him to prod her on that, to toughen her up on that issue? Not that she's has been asked about it already ad nauseum, because it's going to be an issue in the fall election if she does win. Bernie would seem to have a natural constituency in Wisconsin. He had 10,000 people come out in Madison that summer to watch him give his speech.
Yeah.
So he's got a natural constituency here. If he can survive through those, again, it's easier to run a state-by-state election where you go from Iowa to New Hampshire to South Carolina, then Nevada, or vice versa. So,
the SEC primary?
But then March 1st to 15th, now you have like multiple states. That requires money and organization, and where it's easier to build it up. Not that it's not an easy task, but it's easier to build it up in one state at a time.
Yeah.
Having multi-state operations going, that's a little bit, you know, can he meet that burden, if you will, and be prepared for those?
And then the final topic, you and I were both at the governor's press conference when he said, I want to retire my $1.2 presidential debt by the end of the year. Did that surprise you?
No, he raised, it's interesting, he still raised $580,000 and change, even after he got out. To small dollar donors. So people are still giving to his presidential campaign.
Right.
So if he's on that pace, he'll pay it off, I don't say easily, but that was $500,000 plus in 3 months after he got out. You can replicate that. And Walker pointed out he has 300,000 plus donors, thanks to the recall election.
Yes.
In
his database.
In his database.
If they across keep the nation.
Popping in 25, 50 bucks at a time, you know, you can get there by the end of the year, you know, without paying it off. So.
And he also said, I told you so. Cruz is going to win Iowa.
I don't think he told you and I about that. He must have told somebody privately, but he wasn't bragging about that to us.
I agree. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind for this week.